Hello, you wonderful woman. Welcome to the Love is Coming podcast. I'm your host, Persia Lawson, one of the UK's most successful love coaches, according to the Times magazine, and author of the book, Love is Coming. It's my mission through this podcast to help single women, specifically female leaders, get powerful, soul-expanding relationships that revolutionize your growth, impact, and happiness during your time on planet Earth. Let's get straight to it. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Love is Coming podcast. So I am very excited and I'm going to be honest, a little bit nervous, but very, very excited mostly to be speaking to the wonderful Amanda Kuda today on the show. So Amanda is an alcohol-free lifestyle expert. She is a holistic life coach, speaker and author living, working and playing in Austin, Texas. As a coach, Amanda helps ambitious, soul-centered women stop drinking and start manifesting the life they deserve and desire. She teaches a modern approach to personal development, self-actualization, and spiritual enlightenment through the lens of elective sobriety. And Amanda's first book, Unbottled Potential, Break Up with Alcohol and Break Through to Your Best Lives, hits shelves on October the 3rd, and it is being published by Penguin Random House. So this is so exciting and I'm thrilled to have you here, Amanda. How are you doing today?
Oh my goodness. Well, I'm so excited too. I love doing interviews and meeting new people and just having conversations about the things we're both so passionate about. So I'm super excited to just chat today.
Yeah, me too. And I'm just going to say a little disclaimer because of what I mentioned earlier, that I am a little bit nervous, but mostly excited. And the reason is this episode might be quite confronting for some people. Mm-hmm. And listen, I'm saying this as someone who actually, I'm gonna really go out there and be 100% honest. I actually avoided reading your book for quite some time because it was, and I didn't want to think about it. I was like, I'm too busy. And then I knew I had it coming. We had this chat coming up and I've been in Italy for the last few weeks and I came back a couple of days ago. And on Monday, I was somewhat hungover, not horrifically so, but we were celebrating my in-law's 40th wedding anniversary. And basically a series of things led me to be like, oh, I need to read Amanda's book. And it was like, I cannot even explain to you that it has changed my life this week. Wow. It has changed my life. And I'm going to go into that a bit more shortly. But the reason I want to say that is some people may have seen the title of this episode and gone, oh, no, either not for me or I can't do it, which is probably what I would have done in the part,
Oh, me too. And then I ended up writing a book about it. Same.
But if you are listening right now, there's a reason you're listening. And just keep an open mind and stick with it. And if you're feeling like almost weirdly a bit of shame or like panic, which is kind of how I was feeling before reading your book and even starting it because it resonated so much, then it's okay. That's all I wanted to start with. Yes. I wanted to start with that.
I think that's so important and beautiful because let me tell you what, I was there too. You know, 7 or 8 years ago, I was in this space of wanting to change my life, but not wanting the answer to be to stop partying and drinking, even though I didn't have like a addictive relationship to alcohol. It was definitely a big part of my social lifestyle. And let me tell you what, I tried everything else to make my life be the way that I wanted it to be, except for looking at that relationship to alcohol. And it was just like, it just kept knocking on my door. Like, hey, Amanda, by the way, hey, Amanda, we're back. And it is a little confronting because it's such a normalized social habit that we, you know, ingrain into our lives and personality. And I was right there 7 or 8 years ago. So I just want to honor anyone who's feeling that way and say that, you know, my intention as a teacher and an author and a speaker and whatever other roles that I have is to make it like a permission slip to where it's less confronting, to where it isn't so like you have to go into this dark basement and, you know, make all these admissions and completely, you know, form your life around this change. I actually think your life forms around the change if you decide to follow this, you know, kind of curiosity that might be coming up for you, maybe. Or I think that probably if you are listening, there is some sort of level of curiosity there. So I just really honor anyone who's listening to this kind of wondering, could this be for me? But secretly also wanting the answer to be no.
Yeah. Oh, it doesn't resonate at all. Not for me. Yeah. I totally feel you. I totally feel you. So there's so many points in there that we're going to come back to because
just a lot of interesting threads. But let's start, and I know you've kind of given us an overview there, but can you share a bit more about your journey, about why you chose to become booze-free, but with a specific focus, given what this podcast is about, on how your love life may have factored into this?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's really important to know that I grew up in the middle of nowhere. And that means that I lived in a small town where everyone knew everyone else's business. There was no hiding. It was very clear who the popular people were, the haves and have nots. And I fell into the have not group. And I was you can't tell me from me sitting down, but I was tall, skinny, bad skin. Like, I just was an ugly duckling, did not come into my own until into my 20s. And I desperately wanted for connection with my peers, and especially that romantic connection. You know, I was the one like writing boys' names in a folder, but I would never even tell a friend that I had a crush on someone because I felt unworthy of liking some of those people and even fathoming that they might like me back. So in high school specifically, I never got asked on a date, never went out with anyone. Every time there was a dance, I either went alone or my two, you know, we have, do you have prom in the UK?
It's like what?
A formal.
Oh, yeah. We call it the sick form ball.
Okay. Yes. So our ball was, you know, every year the two highest grades got to go. And so I ended up inviting people because no one asked me. And I have such a tender space in my heart for that young woman who had no self-confidence, who, you know, just felt really sad and alone. And I mean, I had a decent friend group. I was hanging out with plenty of people. I had an active social life, but I didn't feel as though I belonged. And when I was maybe in my second to last year of high school, I started to realize that all of the other kids my age had started going to parties and they'd stopped doing sleepovers and innocent, fun little things. And so they were doing these parties and going out and drinking. And at first that seemed kind of lowbrow and kind of like mean girl, like only the mean girls were doing that. But I was so desperate to fit in and to have this weight of insecurity lifted off my shoulder that I was like, what the hell? I'm going to try it too. And you know what? It was going out and partying and drinking. It was like this magic elixir was going through my body. And suddenly I felt okay to kind of like be a little flirtatious with the guys who I didn't feel. And I'll use the word entitled. I didn't feel that I was entitled to be flirtatious with some of these people because I wasn't on their level, quote unquote, on their level. And this, it just gave me this confidence to actually even, you know, explore my sexuality, explore dating, explore sex, explore any of these things that I was too timid to explore otherwise. And so every single one of my formative romantic relationships was sponsored by alcohol. First kiss, first time, first date, all of these things, I had alcohol kind of backing me. So going into college, same thing. I had kind of gotten my glow up. So suddenly men were paying attention to me, or maybe it was just that there were like more people around. I don't know, whatever happened in college, I started like actually having, you know, guys approach me, but still I was terrified because I'd never, you know, initiated a kiss, a conversation, a date, any of these things. And so I was constantly fueling my courage with alcohol. And I look back at that version of myself and I see how difficult it was actually to form a connection with someone romantically because, or in any sense, because I wasn't being myself. I was becoming this like, you know, over-characterized version, this like just over-glamorous version of who I thought I was supposed to be. And so in terms of relationships, which was something, you know, I wanted for so bad. I wanted a boyfriend and all of these things that I saw my friends having that I was kind of a latecomer to. And you know what, when I did start getting in those relationships, they were kind of lackluster because so many of the intimate moments, again, were formed around alcohol. And as I just look back at who I was through my 20s, so many of those relationships were, you know, in the book, I like to call it forged on liquid bonds instead of stable, secure, solid bonds. And wow, most of those relationships, even though there was some level of connections and definitely some level of learning there, just weren't truly very vulnerable because they were all based on the vulnerability coming out with alcohol. And yeah, I'll kind of stop there and I won't transition into what happened afterwards, but I just think that my, you know, my relationships were very surface level back then because I was trying to be a character versus be who I was. And I thought that's what I needed to do to be liked.
Yeah. My God, I resonate with so much of that. And mm-hmm. I know, you know, our culture in the UK is terrible for drinking. It's mm-hmm. awful. I actually was in Canada for my second year of university. Mm-hmm. And it was better there, much better than the UK, because like in the UK, it was like the rugby guys literally just getting naked and being like really, actually really not okay. So they were like, they would like drink so much that I was not expecting to share this, but then they would like piss, they'd all piss in a shoe and then like drink, like they were weird. And that's
oh
like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's English. I mean, it's just awful. And then obviously the Irish and you know what it's like over here. It's completely crazy. So we, you know, we were just so steeped in that. But mm-hmm. what I love about your approach, going back to what you shared earlier, you were talking about the basements and, you know, there's obviously the recovery community. And mm-hmm. I know in your book, you talk about it didn't resonate for you to go into AA. You didn't feel like you're an alcoholic, but you don't have to be an alcoholic to know that drink is having a negative impact on you. Because, and this was mm-hmm. really hard for me to just own. Yeah. Let's be honest, alcohol is ethanol mixed with sugar to make it more mm-hmm. palatable. It is a poison.
Yep.
And no one wants to admit that, mm-hmm. at least of all mm-hmm. me.
Yeah.
So just to give you a bit of context around why this book has like really changed my life this week, my parents are actually addicts who got sober. So drugs, alcohol, mm-hmm. you name it. They both went into rehab, my mum for a couple of times. And so I grew up with this and I didn't really understand it as a kid, mm-hmm. but I knew there was something not right.
Right.
And then by the time I get into sixth form, some 15, 16, everything changed. So I know firsthand when they got mm-hmm. sober, how dramatically our family's life changed. It was like night and day. Mm-hmm. However, the way that it affected me is like, you'd think, oh, that's the happy end of the story because they're sober. But the way that it affected me, and it had been affecting me for years before they were sober, is that I actually got sex and love addiction and it was really mm-hmm. quite bad. Mm-hmm. I started drinking probably 13, 14 and that mm-hmm. that really fueled the stuff around sex and love addiction. I was completely addicted to cheating. Mm-hmm. And then when I came out of uni, probably, and thank God it wasn't any younger, but when I was around 21, I got into the coke scene in London. I was an actress and that was really bad for me. I wasn't addicted. I never bought it. I was just around men who would give it to me. I ended up working in a strip club. I mean, it's bizarre talking about it now because again, my life.
You're like, weird. This whole other life that existed.
But I got, I started my spiritual journey in around beginning of 2011. My love life just came to a crash and coke was lit. And I just went, I'm done. And it's a long story that I won't go into, but basically I started my healing journey. And this is what really resonated in your book, because I was doing this healing and I was, you know, living at home with my parents again to save money. And so I was in the sober household and I was for the most part pretty, you know, I would maybe drink once a week. Mm-hmm. I had quite a healthy period there, mm-hmm. but alcohol was always sort of there in the background. And we're talking now, so like sort of 12 years. Then I got into this career. I left acting. So mm-hmm. my life changed radically. I met my now husband just over 8 years ago. And we are both big, you know, extroverts, very, mm-hmm. very sociable. And a lot of our friends are what we call like the spiritual party crew, which uh-huh. is kind of what you were talking about.
Yeah.
And some of them are sober. Some of them are, you know, like had this sort of thing. And I think there was this part of me that was like, well, I've given up the cheating. I've given up the mm-hmm. coke. It wasn't even hard because I was done. Mm-hmm. But I'm mm-hmm. not giving up the boot. I need advice. Do you know what I mean? And basically we went and did ayahuasca in Costa Rica last February, my husband and I, which was life-changing and amazing. And for 1 month, completely sober. And my friends were like, you are glowing. We were getting ready for our wedding. And this is what I wanted to bring up with you. I actually think I went into self-sabotage because I could have carried on. Like I felt so good, but it was almost like, but mm-hmm. you drink, like that's what you do. And so, and there's the wedding and, you know, all mm-hmm. of this stuff. And I think I basically didn't have, I don't know if you know that book, The Big Leap. by, mm-hmm. I think it's
hundreds. I've read it probably 15 times.
Yes. I think that it's that. And it brings that, you know, I know that you've studied with Marianne Williamson and it makes me think of her thing, her quote, our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Mm-hmm. Our deepest fear is that we're more powerful
beyond. That we are powerful beyond measure.
Oh, you haven't got it there.
I have it like right there.
Stop it.
On my wall.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop yes. it. Of course
and
you
it's
do.
Fine. Yes, of course.
Of course you do. So that is why when I was in Italy and it was very indulgent, we were eating a lot, we were drinking a lot of wine. I love my wine, you know, but I started reading a book on this like bit of a hangover on Monday. And it was when you were talking about that, it's the spiritual connection and the alcohol as much. And I could get to a certain place. Mm-hmm. But unless I was completely sober, which by the way, when I was like, I've traveled a lot, I've done a lot of yoga. And when I was sober in those times, I felt high like the mm-hmm. whole time.
Yeah. Like your own high on your own supply, like your own little psychedelic trip. Yes. It feels so good.
Yeah. And that made me think, I love what you talk about in the book around manifesting. And I don't think this gets talked about nearly enough, but actually mm-hmm. it makes so much sense. Could you just speak into a little bit about the relationship between alcohol and manifestation?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it took me a while to put two and two together, but once I did, I thought, you know, whoa, I am onto something here. And so this has been like one of my most profound teachings because it is so radical and also something that people don't want to believe until they see it. But I want to start this with a preface that alcohol is not bad, wrong, or evil. The universe is not punishing you for drinking. None of that. I don't believe that. This is not some like, you know, Christian hellfire and brimstone talk. This is purely about energy. And it's basically, you know, energetics, which is very much like mathematics. So here's the equation. Everything in your life, everything you do has energy. Like this highlighter that I have on my desk has an energy, an energetic frequency. And alcohol also has an energetic frequency. It just happens to be quite low because it's a depressant. And even if you're drinking alcohol for a quote unquote happy reason, for a celebratory reason, you still experience a hangover from a celebration, right? It still brings your energetic vibration down. And so this will be, I'll do some like visual gestures for people who are watching the video, but you'll still be able to get it if you're just listening. So imagine that your deepest dreams and desires are so high up on the energetic frequency scale, because why would you want a dream and desire that was low vibe? All of your deepest dreams and desires, the person you want to manifest, the job you want to manifest, the abundance you want to manifest, those are high vibe dreams. Now, if you're like me and you had a little bit of a self-esteem thing, a little bit of a self-worth thing, then your self-worth was always a little bit lower than your dreams and desires anyway. And then because that self-worth was a little bit shaky, you use alcohol to compensate, therefore lowering your level of energetic vibration anyway. So, and you know, also if you're like me, I'm very high achieving. I'm very like, I will drive and I will figure things out. So I was seeing in my life as a drinker, a lot of success, but let's be clear. Those dreams were superficial dreams that I actually didn't really want. They were just things I was told I was supposed to want. And I was going to be damned if I didn't make them happen. So I would muscle through just about anything to make them come through, to make them come true. Now, the reality is though, that if we want our deepest dreams and desires, which are up here on a mountaintop, and we are down here in kind of like a little bit of a hole, the universe has a kind of heavy lift to get you out of the hole and get you onto the mountaintop. So here is an equation for helping yourself with that. First of all, stop drinking alcohol. That's automatically going to raise your energetic vibration and help you all the time vibrate at a higher level. Also, do a little self-work work and spirituality work. I was already doing that, but as you kind of described, it wasn't kicking in. It's like I was doing it, but then I was canceling it out with the drinking. So I was kind of always at like even keel, but I wasn't fully experiencing the profundity of the spiritual work that I was doing. So remove alcohol and all of a sudden that stuff is elevating. And I mean, this isn't instantaneous, but you start to feel it pretty quickly. And then what do you know? You're suddenly going up the elevator of energetic frequency and you are now a match for the things that vibrate at your same level for your deepest dreams and desires. And they come into your life with ease. Doesn't mean you don't have to do anything. You still have to take aligned action. But what I found when I stopped drinking and really started showing up for myself is that I started manifesting at a very high rate. And it was just like things that I had been wanting for my entire life, all of a sudden popped into existence and they were drawn to me as if they were always wanting me, because they were. They were just waiting on me to get out of my own way so that they could connect with me. And this is the experience of so many of the people I work with. And I just think it's really, it's like a life hack. It's like the secret code that you can unlock. And again, alcohol isn't bad, but it definitely isn't helping you if you're trying to live a high vibe life.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm literally getting full body shivers this whole episode. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, I'm really not naughty, but I'm pretty bold. like with the universe, my higher power, I'm like, right. Okay. I'm like pretty demanding.
Yeah.
So when I started reading your book on Monday and I was having these, and this was all so unexpected. I was not planning this, especially on the back of my very indulgent Italy trip. But I said, okay, universe, I'm getting some really strong signals here that you want me to, at the very least, explore ditching booze, mm-hmm. at least for a period of time, mm-hmm. beyond what I've done in the past, which I, okay, right, fuck, okay. I said, if I need something here.
Uh-huh. Give me a sign. Throw me a bone.
So I said, right, I need, so basically this opportunity came into my life in summer, and it is like you say, it was like the biggest dream opportunity, mm-hmm. the audition for it, where I can't really talk much about it, but it's for a show. Obviously I used to be an actress. So it's sort of merging all my favorite things of like performance aspect, but with what I teach. And it's the dream. And I hadn't heard back for quite a while, and I know TV and stuff takes ages, but I said, look, mm-hmm. I need to hear something, and I either need to get it or it needs to be that or something better. Mm-hmm. And bearing in mind, I hadn't heard from him for a month or so. The next day. And by the time, which I completely forgot, I said, I will do it if you do give me that or something better.
You're like, come on.
I'm not saying that that's the right thing to do, but as I said, I'm a bit cheeky. So the next day, when I'm not even thinking about it, I open my inbox, because it's always when you're not, the minute you're not thinking mm-hmm. about it, and I was feeling mm-hmm. really high vibe, and there's an email. And they're really interested, and they wanted me to send some more stuff. And I was like, what the fuck? Because I was almost like, oh no.
You're like, wait a second, I'm not ready.
But then I was like, do you know what? If not now, when? Mm-hmm. If not now, when? I was calculating earlier, I was like, I've done like 25, a quarter of a century of decade, a quarter of a century, sorry, of research, as I'm going to call it, out on the mm-hmm. field yeah. of drinking alcohol. And I'm not going to lie, I've had some great times.
Yeah.
I've also had some really shit times.
Yeah.
Like when you actually think about the percentage of time that you're having a good time on alcohol mm-hmm. versus the percentage of time that you're not, and the effects of it, cost of, you know, if you factor all of those things, the cost of it, the, you know, all of it, it's not actually that great odds.
No,
it's the illusion.
The math doesn't come through.
It does not. And if you were like eating food, right, that tastes really delicious in the moment. I was thinking about this the other day. You're eating delicious food. It tastes great in the moment. And then, but you knew you were going to be heavily ill from it the next mm-hmm. day. Would you eat that food?
No. And you couldn't even, you know, it's so strange. I had food poisoning. I've very rarely, knock on wood, had it, but I had it from like this like salmon and crab dish a couple of years ago. And I still to this day cannot touch crab. Like I finally got back to salmon, but it's like one of those things that if you're ill from something, your body's like, I need a break from that. But alcohol, how many times have I been ill from that? And I still went back and went back into the arena with it. And it's just this really messed up thing, that torture that we do to ourselves, and for what? And I finally just decided, geez, this is not helpful. And it's kind of boring, and it's just the odds are always not in my favor. And so what would happen if I just didn't do it for a while? And you know, from reading my book, my intention was never to stop drinking forever. But once I started feeling so good and all of these manifestations started coming in, I was just like, wait a second, why would I go back to that? Yeah. It makes no sense, because I don't want to sully this other really amazing, miraculous, magnetic, serendipitous thing that's happening that I finally have most of the things I want. And even the things that are shitty are less shitty because I'm choosing just to deal with them rather than try and drink them away.
Oh my God. It's so, so bloody true. There was something else I was going to say there, but it's completely escaped my mind, because I'm just like resonating with everything you're saying. So I love that your approach is it's not about because there is so much support. You know, AA, I love AA. I've been to AA meetings with my ex. Yeah. I've been with many an addict, of course I have, in my years. My parents are addicts. I've been to AA meetings, and I actually go to Al-Anon for friends and family of addicts, and alcoholics changed my life. But it's, I always kind of felt like it didn't feel right for, I'm not saying I'll never go, but it didn't actually feel the right thing. It didn't feel, doesn't feel right at this point in my life to say I'm an alcoholic and to come from that perspective.
Right.
Whereas it did for the sex and love addict stuff, because I was like, yeah, there's no question of a doubt, you know, just look at the state of my fucking love life. So I love the thing that really hooked me in with your book is that it's about unbottled potential, because like you, I'm a very big overachiever. And like you, I've actually achieved a hell of a lot, even though I've been, you know, drinking a lot of the time, or like a fair amount of the time since I got into this work. And so, but the periods I haven't, I have no, there has definitely been like more things that have come in and that have manifested. So I love that, that perspective, that this is an elective sobriety you talk about, that this is a, it's an empowering thing. And that's where, I mean, you can probably tell from my energy, which I, again, I wouldn't have expected this. I was not ready to even contemplate this, not seriously before now, because I saw it as kind of, I guess, I've got a big wound, and I'd love for your thoughts on this, and I think a lot of us do, around the feeling of exclusion, being excluded, which we do as humans, obviously, feeling excluded from the tribe. So there's that element, a very human element, but there's also very linked to my upbringing and feeling like, you know what I mean?
So abandoned,
there's a lot of trauma. There's a lot of trauma mixed in with it. But the reality is now there is such a big tribe. The sober community and sober tribe is not only really fucking big. There's so many resources. There's so many amazing alcohol-free drinks that we've actually got a gin bar down the road. But like, there's so many amazing alcohol-free options, like really delicious, that you can feel that you're going out and socializing and you're having a nice, you know, grown-up drink, but you're not going to feel shit the next day. So you're not, even if you might feel ousted from one tribe, you're not going to, you've got a whole new one that'll be welcoming you with open arms.
Yes, yes. Okay, I want to talk about that, like, exclusionary piece, but I also want to wrap back really quick to what you were talking about with you starting the book. This just, like, re-popped into my mind, and asking basically the universe for a sign, like, show me that this is the right path. And I think that, you know, when we get out of our own way in a really big way, like saying, I'm not going to drink, it's kind of like saying to the universe, basically what you did, like, let's go, show me what you fucking got. And the universe is like, okay, we've been waiting on, we have this one dangling for you, here you go. And if you are doing something, you have a dream on your heart that you know you want to devote time to, there is no faster way for you to actually just show up in full capacity than for you to stop drinking. So even if you, and this is not what I would want for anyone, because my whole thing is I want your life to be so magnificent that alcohol is just not even a question. But even if, like, you have this opportunity coming, you know, and you mentioned the big leap, and in the big leap, it is, we have our upper limit problem. And that's when you get to a point of life that is so joyful that you subconsciously sabotage something and bring yourself back down. So if I were you in this example, or anyone listening has a big opportunity that's on the table, something that is coming to fruition, I would remove alcohol unquestionably for that period of time to just allow yourself to be the biggest, boldest version of you, which, guess what, is going to be uncomfortable, because most of us, even though we want to shine, like, you are an actor, of course you want to shine, but there's part of us that says we're not worthy. We don't deserve this, or we can't be that big. We can't be as big as we possibly, or we shouldn't be as big as we possibly could be. And so we do these little micro self-sabotages to pull ourselves down. And I think that when you are on the brink of success, that which you have this piece right now that is so fresh for you, it's right there at, ready for the taking. And it would be so wise for you just to say, you know what, for right now, it's a no, because I want to show up as my biggest, fullest self. And I know that that's going to be uncomfortable in some aspects. I'm going to want to dull myself down. I'm going to want to play small. And there's going to be times when your joy is so palpable that you'll never have felt that level of joy in your body before. And you're, it's like the rock star effect, right? Why do rock stars go home after a show and drink and do drugs? Because they've gone on a dopamine high, and now they need something to bring themselves back down to reality. But your job right now is to manage that joy, because it's been put in your heart for a reason. It's to manage that joy and feel it, even when it feels overwhelming, and be like, I fucking deserve this. Not like, I should have a drink. because that's just going to pull your joy down. So I just really want to encourage you to like ride that roller coaster of, wow, this feels really good. And I deserve to feel good. And I earned all of this. And I'm supposed to be here right now.
Oh my God, preach. It's so interesting you said that about that, because I'm also a singer and I've done a lot of performing. And I really, you know what? I think a lot of performers kid themselves, or not even just performers, all of us, when you have that natural high and that joy and we go, let's celebrate with a drink. We think, I genuinely think, because we've been duped by the whole bloody industry, which is, you know, billions of pounds, I'm sure. Yeah. But duped that like, oh, this is a celebratory thing. But I actually think it's that we, like you said, we, and I'd never thought of that. We don't know how to hold that amount of joy. And so we're actually trying to dull it instead of using other things that can ground us.
Nailed it.
So interesting.
100%. I like to say that, like, basically when you drink, especially in a state of joy or in a state of sorrow, what you don't elevate that joy higher or get rid of the sorrow, you pickle it. Like alcohol is a preservative, right? So you pickle it, but not in a good way. You stop it from being able to increase or like fully just flesh out, basically. So instead of letting that joyful feeling ride the high, or feeling through that like woeful feeling, you just like pickle it and preserve it in your body. And that's like not what you want. You don't want your joy to stop right at that moment you drink. I mean, yes, I guess that's what you're actually doing because you don't know how to feel it. But I cannot tell you how beautiful and yet uncomfortable it is for the first moment when you truly feel and experience joy and elation. Like it feels kind of discombobulating in your body. It feels foreign. And yet, if you let yourself get used to it, it can feel, it does feel really, really good. And we all deserve that. But because it's been so foreign, we just don't know how to hold it. And so I'll loop back around now to the question you asked about belonging. And I actually have a really beautiful story about this in a full circle moment that has to do with being accepted, being loved, and feeling joy and positive energy coming towards you. So, you know, as I stated, I started drinking because I wanted to fit in. I didn't feel that I did. I always felt when I was a little kid that I was a little bit of a weirdo, that, you know, I would have rather spent time talking to my teachers than my peers. I always kind of had this little like witchy side to me that I believed in something magical. And I could tell that a lot of my peers didn't believe that. So, you know, it just didn't seem practical to hang out only with my teachers as a kid. I realized like, hey, something's off about that. I can figure this out. I'm smart. I can figure out how to fit in with the rest of the kids. And I'm an empath. I'm also like highly sensitive. So, you know, I have all of these other like very intuitive senses that I didn't quite know how to manage. And I let myself, and this is not saying anything bad about the other, my peers or anything, but I basically just used alcohol as a way to quiet those like superpowers that I had and make myself feel normal to be around everyone else. But the reality is that you have these feelings, these intuitions, these empathic pieces of you for a reason. And maybe you're not meant to be normal. Maybe you're not meant to be just like everyone else. You're meant to be your most authentic, like self-actualized you. But yet we see, you know, many of us are, you know, like I said, I grew up in a small town, so I didn't have the option to go choose another social group. I had this core group of people and that's who I had to choose from. Now, as an adult, as I've expanded my geographic location and made some choices for myself, now I can choose who my friends are. But there's this part of me that's programmed to believe this type of person. I am now this type of person. Therefore, I will, like attracts like, I will go after these types of friends. And so what happened to me as a drinker is that I was attracting more of the same people who I was trying to be like. And I got myself in this vicious cycle where all I could see, it's like I had blinders on, all I could see was more of the same. So I believed that everyone drank, that if I stopped drinking, I would be a social outcast. And that if I stopped drinking, I would not be able to find any friends because everyone drank. And so because I had these blinders on, I wasn't able to see in the periphery all of the other people that were available out there, like you said, that are non-drinkers, that are people on a spiritual path. I had this very narrow line of sight. And the reality is that when I stopped drinking and started to, and tried to continue to hang out with those same friends in the same social settings, I started to feel really bored. And I just realized like, actually, none of this is fun. I was making my brain dumb to believe that all of this was fun, but we're not really connecting. We're talking about reality TV, drama, boys and work, and not in a like very vulnerable, intimate way. We're just like jabbering. And so I started realizing I can't hang out with my friends in this same way. I can't hang out in these same settings. If I meant to keep these friends, I said a prayer, dear universe, like show me how to keep them in my life. And you know what? Most of those people either transformed the way that we hung out without much of my doing. So we started hanging out in different settings. So instead of going to happy hour and dinner and the bars, we would go on hikes. We would go out for coffee. And the ones who didn't jive with that, we didn't have some sort of drama. We just kind of stopped hanging out so much. And that felt okay. And what that did is create space for more accepting, congruent, vibrationally matched friendships to come into my life. And the full circle moment of just feeling this joy and elation and being able to be with these emotions and being able to feel love was, you know, a couple of months ago, I had a friend ask to throw me a shower, a book shower, because I haven't been married or had kids, which are these big initiations where most of the time you will have this kind of celebration for you. And she was like, Amanda, this was a really tedious process. You really, you know, worked hard to bring this thing to life. I want to throw you a shower. So she threw me this intimate event with, you know, 15 or 20 women of my closest friends. And first of all, I just looked around the room and I thought, wow, there's 20 women who took time out of their day to celebrate me, who have come into this space. And we did like a very spiritual ceremony there where we sat down and did a sound bath, and they each wrote me letters. And while they were writing, I sat there and I meditated. And I've never been able to be like fully undistracted and actually really feel in the vibration of a moment. And I just felt this overwhelming sense of love coming at me, and generosity and appreciation and admiration and adoration. And it felt so powerful that all of these women were sending this to me unselfishly, just loving on me. And it was just almost, it wasn't even overwhelming because I prepped myself so much to be able to accept it that it just felt like beautiful. And I can't think of any other words to describe it, just this pouring of love towards me that I was able to receive. And I think the best thing about that moment was they all like stood up and appreciated me. And a past version of me would have been like, would have tried to brush off the compliment and said, oh my gosh, I love you too. Or no, you're so pretty. Or no, oh, whatever it is that we try to do to get rid of a compliment and get rid of love when it comes towards us. I was able just to say, thank you. And that felt so good to be able to accept the love that was being offered to me. And also to show to myself that I had all of these people who I have genuine relationships with, who they showed up to love me. And I just want anyone who's listening who has that fear to know that I went from being such a feeling like a social outcast who had to do something to fit in, to feeling, you know, Brené Brown describes it as belonging. And I felt like I belonged, and that felt so good.
Oh God, that's so beautiful. Like that idea of the book shower, I threw myself a book launch.
Yeah.
I'd thrown like myself. I wish I had asked a friend or I had a friend, because that is just so, and listen, I've written two books. Three, but two like proper hardcore ones. And I know how fucking tedious it is and hard, yes. how much pride you feel. And yeah. I love that idea. So anyone listening, I just think this is a complete side note, but really important. I've actually got a chapter in my book about this. We do not as women have to just wait till someone gets engaged, married, or is having a baby, which yes. is linked with men. Like there's other things we can do. And mm-hmm. whether it's throwing your friend a book shower or whatever it is, I mm-hmm. love that.
And yes.
I also, oh my God, I just have so many things I want to talk to you about. It's nuts. The next thing I wanted to ask you before we focus specifically on dating, mm-hmm. relationships, sex, all that sort of malarkey, is something very key mm-hmm. that was really interesting in the book. And it was where you were talking about moderation versus mm-hmm. abstaining. Mm-hmm. So as I said earlier, when it came to cheating, it was like basically what made me just after years of doing it, like that go, I'm done. was when it was done to me by someone I was mm-hmm. very in love with. I needed to experience that pain. So it was a rock bottom. Mm-hmm. When it was giving up cocaine, it was very similar. It was like I had a very weird situation. I'd had many a weird situation, but I just had one that I just went, I'm done. And mm-hmm. and I don't, there was some temptation over the years, but it wasn't, I mean, maybe I'm in not remembering it now because it's such a mm-hmm. long time ago, but it wasn't unbearable. Whereas I think for so long, the idea of like fully abstaining from drink, given that it's such a part of, you know, everything everywhere in the world, mm-hmm. That felt really like, it felt like losing something. Whereas mm-hmm. the way you present it, it's like, actually what you're, if you see it, the turn it on its head, what you're mainly losing is the shit parts of it. And what you're gaining is so much of the good. Mm-hmm. But coming back to moderation, abstaining, I don't know if abstination mm-hmm. is the
word. It can be now.
it can be, exactly. It should be. So my mum-in-law, who is actually here a minute ago, she is probably one of the very few mm-hmm. people I know who truly has a easily moderate relationship mm-hmm. with alcohol.
Yeah.
Like I could happily have one glass and that's it. But if I'm on a night out,
yeah,
that's when it would, you know, because everyone out, you just keep going. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's why
yeah.
I find it hard to have just one glass.
Yeah.
So therefore, I'm not a natural moderator. Mm-hmm. And I don't think many of us are. I think it's such a small percentage. Like my mum-in-law, she can literally take it or leave it. She's just not bothered. It doesn't, she's not on a night out. She might have one, she might have two, but she's not thinking about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
So what's this about?
So I think it's, you know, we have this romanticization of, oh, if I could just moderate, like I have my one of my best friends from grad school, she just doesn't like the feeling of being drunk. So she doesn't really drink that much. And I look at that and I think, oh, could I be like that? But no, because I like the feeling of being drunk. So we just naturally have different dispositions. And I think that where we get into trouble is we try to make ourselves into something that we are not. And most people are not natural moderators of alcohol, or guess what? You'd already be doing it. You'd already be doing it. And just because you can't doesn't mean you're addicted or that you could be as a caveat, but it doesn't mean you're addicted. It doesn't mean you're bad or you're wrong. It just means that you're not a natural moderator. And the person who I think explains this really well is Gretchen Rubin. She's an author and a podcaster. And she says that naturally, most of us are either moderators or abstainers. And moderators naturally moderate. They know that their resolve is best if they get to have the option. And abstainers are better when it's all or nothing. And so for me, once alcohol became a no, it was also a no problem. Like I just kind of took that out of my mind. I didn't even have to think about it. And it was actually for someone who fought it for so long because I wanted to moderate, it freed up so much mental space that I was using to kind of bargain with myself that it was actually really freeing not to really screw around with the idea of moderation because it just didn't come naturally to me. If you, just the same thing with a plate of cookies, if you put a plate of cookies in front of me and say, you can either have one or none, I better choose none because if I go in for one, I'm probably going to want more. And it just stopped making sense to me. I had glamorized it to this level that it was like this holy grail thing that I wanted until I realized how much like insanity it took out of my mind just to stop worrying about it altogether.
I was the same. And again, I'm going to, sorry to keep mentioning cocaine. I don't even know if I should be, but oh well.
Yeah.
But I was like that. It's like, I can't have one, like it's too bloody Moorish. Like mm-hmm. I can't. And I'm not saying I wasn't a coke addict. I wasn't going mm-hmm. out there thinking about it in the morning or anything like that. But the whole thing is these things are addictive. Like, you know, they are designed to be addictive. And let's mm-hmm. be honest, so social media, so many other things. It's like, if I don't want to get down the rabbit hole of social media, then I need to not open it and pretend to myself I'm going to just be on there for like 10 seconds to check.
Oh, never happens.
No, you're not. You're going to be on there scrolling. And before you know it, it's an hour's passed. So I love that you also have this idea in the book that's like, I don't know if you said it exactly like this, but it's a bit like moderation is like hooking up with a toxic ex-lover mm-hmm. who keeps coming back around attempting to seduce you. It's like, mm-hmm. that is so interesting, thinking of booze as a toxic old relationship or toxic ex. Like, where else do we do that in our life where You know what I mean?
Yes. And it's, there's this thought that it's been so long that like, maybe you can have a hookup and it'll be just fine. And that with a toxic ex, that rarely happens. And it's not going to happen with alcohol. If you have abstained, this is the fantasy that so many people have. And a lot of my clients get caught up in this one, that they've abstained for 60 days, 90 days, 6 months, that they're like, oh, I should be fine just to have like a little fling. And then that takes them down this deep, dark place that they did not mean to be in. And, you know, I think that we've all recognized with breakups that having space from the person we broke up with and going no contact is probably the most healing thing. And so if you are trying to break up with alcohol, I recommend you go no contact and don't try to test the waters and just see if your resolve has changed, because it probably hasn't. And then you're just going to frustrate and kick yourself. Just like if you go back to a toxic ex, it's very unlikely that they've changed and you're probably going to get hurt and feel frustrated.
Yeah. I'm literally just typing this because it's so good. Sorry.
Take notes, please.
Booze and toxic ex. Yeah. So good. So I mean, that's one of the main things I say with breakups is like, do not do it because I'm just checking they're okay. No, that's going to result in a like 3 hour.
Delete, block, do not play.
It's a wound that you just keep scratching at. It will never heal. Yes. So that leads us on really nicely to talk about, you know, sober dating, partnerships and sex. And they're kind of three separate things. So what can you share, just one key insight for each of those three things when it comes to like ditching booze and going and sober dating, relationships and sex?
Yes. So, you know, as someone again, who, let me remind you, I was an ugly duckling. All of my formative romantic relationships were sponsored by alcohol. I was a 30-year-old woman who had very little experience with relationships, dating, or sex outside of being drunk or drinking through them. And that was a humbling ass experience to go back into the dating world as a 30-something, kind of feeling very raw and vulnerable and inexperienced, and yet also the most empowering feeling on the other side of the spectrum. Because, you know, we're told that we need to meet for drinks, to go out on dates, to have alcohol to kind of loosen us up a little bit. And when I looked back at all of my relationships, meeting for drinks never really did anything but give me beer goggles and let me stay on a date that I didn't enjoy for longer than I wanted to be there. And sometimes caused me to make decisions with someone that I probably would not in a sober mind have made. And I also, you just never get that great of a connection when you're drinking because you're always kind of a little dulled down. And so I think that, you know, one of the things we fear, especially if you're on the single, in the single world, is that you will be undateable and unable to date as a sober person. And I have to tell you, it's the exact opposite. Now, granted, I want to be full caveat. I am still single and, you know, I know that I will find my partner. I'm certain that I will. And there are times that it's very frustrating, but the dates and the connections that I have had as a non-drinker have been infinitely better, stronger, more juicy and fun than they ever were as a drinker. And I have had more, you know, great dates that still maybe didn't go anywhere, but still were a good date just because I was able to show up and be the full, vulnerable, quirky me. And guess what? If you get in a relationship with me, that's who you're going to get. I am a quirky, strange person. And I would rather you see that from the get than for me to present a different version of myself because I've been drinking. And I would want the same from a partner. So one of the things that I found really beautiful is actually going on dates there where I'm sober. I still date people who drink. That's not my like full preference, but not people who drinking is important to them. Like it's a hobby. Like most of the people who I've dated who are drinkers are the take it or leave it type, but it's so much more refreshing to have those dates where you're both present. And if you're feeling awkward, it's just awkward because that's what relationships are sometimes. And, you know, I think that it's, maybe it's a little like rose colored glasses for me, but I just think it's really a cool experience now looking at it from this perspective that I'm just choosing to show up and just be who I am instead of trying to elevate or dilute parts of myself that I think are most or least acceptable. So that's kind of dating. I just want to give you, like, I have a whole section about this and how to navigate that in my book, but I just want to give you some hope that the dates that I've gone on in the past 6 years have been so much more joyful and connective than anything I did in the past. And then in terms of sex, whoa, let me tell you what, don't forget that alcohol is an anesthetic. So it numbs all of your senses, everything. So even if you are one of those people who think you need a drink to loosen up and be more like sexually free, let me tell you what, you have not experienced anything until you let yourself, like your whole body, like feel sensations and experience things, because alcohol is literally numbing you head to toe. So you can make some conclusions from that about some of the effects it's having on you and what could happen when you're able to feel all of the sensations in your body. So sober sex can be very intimidating, but also really, really liberating and just next level because you're fully present.
You know what? The first time I had sex with my husband, I was sober.
Oh,
it was great. And we were talking about this morning on the dog walk because I said I was interviewing you. And then he said, you know what? I don't remember us ever having good sex drunk. I was like, yeah, well, we wouldn't remember it. We just probably fall asleep. And it's so true. Whereas the sex that we've had, particularly after ayahuasca, bloody hell, it was mind blowing. But when we've been sober and just clear, and it's always so much better. Yeah. And I remember with my ex that my first book was about, it was the first time that I'd ever had sex for the first time with someone sober. Well, it was very unexpected the way it happened with him. And I was so scared, but actually it was really beautiful. Yes. And so I can really vouch for that. And I can, and that also, you know, in terms of being married, I've been with Joe 8 years. We've had a lot of fun, you know, out drinking and partying. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of fun partying where drink actually hasn't been a factor. We've had the most special connection has been, you know, our spiritual relationship. We actually run our first retreat together in Goa earlier this year. And that part of our relationship is just evolving and blossoming. And I know I can see in the future us doing more and working with more couples like that, because, and it can sit, like, I remember back in the day, I'd think, God, that sounds a bit dull, but that's bullshit. It's like, no, you will feel, the weird thing is, when you're sober and elevated and tapped into all this stuff and you're doing things like breath work, which I know you teach, so powerful.
Yeah.
You feel just high. Like you just, like you were saying, high in your own supply. It sounds so, like, it sounds like a cliche, but it's true. Like you cannot get over the connection and the openness and the vulnerability and the just the pure magic of it. It is the best. And I just feel so excited about the future. Mm-hmm. Like I can't. This is, it's just honestly, my mind is still very blown. I do have a question. I need your tips. And I know that you share some stuff in the book about this, but I know other people would really, this would be really useful. So of course the universe was like, not only are we going to give you this book and it's going to completely change your life in like a matter of a few days, but you're going to a wedding on Saturday. One of my husband's old friends, I won't know anyone there. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's interesting. But fortunately, we are staying where the wedding is, like in the actual venue where the wedding is. So I was like, okay, at least that means I can, if I need to go, whatever. Leave.
Yes.
And I think Joe's probably not going to drink anyway. So that's helpful. But have you got any tips for navigating social situations, particularly something like a wedding, which is a long period of time and you're kind of stuck there?
Yes. Oh, do I? Do I have some tips there and some really relevant experience? So I want to say, first of all, like one of my taglines is, if it's not fun without alcohol, it's probably just not fun. So if you were in a situation and you just think it's dull and boring without alcohol, it probably is. And just then you can go. However, I also don't want anyone to discount how much fun you can have if you just choose to have fun, if you just choose to have a good time. So for me, I also had a very early on in my sober experience, something very similar. I was invited to a wedding that was on a resort and I didn't know anyone there. I was the guest of someone. And it was my first time being at a wedding without drinking. And the thing about me is I actually love to dance. I love it. And I just thought, you know what, Amanda, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go into this with a positive attitude. And that's what I want to, you know, share with, like, encourage you to do and anyone else listening. I decided I'm going to go into it with a positive attitude and I'm going to try my best to do everything that I would have done and thought it was fun with alcohol. And then if there comes a point where I'm exhausted or I'm thinking this is dull and not fun at all, then I can leave. But I'm going to try. I'm not just going to say, I don't think it's going to be fun and skip out. I'm going to try to have fun. And you know what happened is that it, and granted, this was, I mean, we're out in this tropical location and her family is a big dancing family, which was also to my benefit, but people dance at weddings anyway. So it's always going to happen. I was on the dance floor. I am drenched in sweat, stark sober. I danced all night. And to this day, I'll see the bride. She's just an acquaintance of mine, but I'll see her and she'll think, Amanda, you are one of the most fun people at our wedding. You were dancing the whole time. And I just have so much pride in that because I was stark sober, just choosing to show up and have fun. And, you know, there, I did get maybe tired earlier than I would have because that's what happens. So maybe I went home a little early, but I had so much fun because I chose to let myself have fun. And it was even more fun because I was present the whole time. I was just like seeing this whole experience through the eyes of joy. So I want to encourage you to like try out, give it a try. Even if you think it might not be fun or it might be unbearable, give it a try. Actually intend to have fun, intend to let yourself feel the joy and do some of the things that you would have done if you were drinking. And also, guess what? When everyone else is drinking and or in various stages of inebriation, you can dance as crazy as you want and no one is going to think anything else. Like even if you feel a little self-conscious about dancing or whatever it is you're doing, nobody's going to notice because they're all in this different state of mind anyway. So you can kind of have a free pass to feel awkward. And I think it's actually a really cool space to give it a test because no one's going to remember if you looked goofy or not. And you might just end up having a really great time.
And also the morning after when we will come down for breakfast and everyone's dying, I'm just going to be like,
you're glowing. You're going to have like a choir leaning behind you.
Yeah, they're going to hate me, but I don't give a shit. You know what? I'm going to do my cheeky thing and go, thank universe that I am just shocked by how easy it is and by how much fun it is. Like I want to go into that energy instead of before when I would think about doing something like that, I'd be like, oh my God, it's going to be really hard. And you know, intention, you will manifest whatever intention you're going in. So going to do like that declaration of like, this is the reality. This is how it's, as if it's already happened. Thank you. This has been like the most fun. It's been so much easier than I could have ever expected. It's been amazing. And I just believe that that is what it's going to be. And I will let you know.
Yes, I know. I cannot wait to hear because I know when you set that intention. And here's what will happen is actually if you ask for the universe, and I always do a prayer before an event like this, just to kind of like center myself, because it can also be just as a forewarning, I would always like pray up before you go into something like this, because when you are in a very stimulating environment like that, and suddenly you are able to be fully stimulated because you have all your faculties about you, sometimes it can feel like a little energetically overwhelming and draining. And so I always pray, help me to find like the energetic, like centeredness that I need to have. Help me to have fun. And you know what? I'm open for a miracle. And you might find someone who comes, you are going to make a connection with someone who you didn't expect to make a connection with. And, I will share that I was in my first wedding as a sober person as well, which is, you know, the wedding party, the whole day is drinking and doing all of these things. And I did my prayer. I asked for a miracle. And I had set aside, I had brought my own non-alcoholic drinks to this wedding and I'd set them behind the bar and the bartender knew they were mine. They were this bridesmaid's drinks. That is just for me. And I didn't know anyone. I didn't even know the groom's party because he's from a different place in the country. And I noticed one of the groomsmen, the cutest one, by the way, had one of my beers. And I'm just like, wait a second. How did you get that? And then I went up to him and started a conversation and he was like, oh my gosh, I don't know how they got these non-alcoholic beers, but I'm so glad they're here because I don't really drink right now. And I thought it was so cool they had them. And I thought, well, that's my doing, and then I all of a sudden was like, not angry at him for having one of my beers. I was like, this is my miracle. This is the universe giving me a little wink that my decision can have a really profound trickle down effect and help and support other people. So look for a little miracle in your weekend as well. I'm certain that one will be available.
Oh, I know it will. I'm so excited. I could literally talk to you forever, but we've already been on for, I think, coming up to an hour. So we're going to start to wrap up with what I call the home straight questions. So it's like rapid lightning round. Think of that episode in Friends, you know, with Ross and that where they do the, you know the one. You know, the
short,
one.
Sweet answers. We got
it. Yeah, that's it. You get it. So many people go, yeah, I get it. And then they give me a I love.
Yes. Which I am, I'm a wordy person. So sometimes I like to go into a story, but we're going to wrap it up here.
We're going to go fast. Yes. Okay. Right. Number one, what love life advice would you give to 15-year-old Amanda Kuda?
You can't mess it up. You can't mess it up and be your most authentic self, because that is how you are going to find your person.
What's one thing people may be surprised to know about you?
This is a good one. I am extremely nerdy. I love to read. I'm just a nerd at heart. And even though I like fancy, fancy posh things, I'm also just an incredible nerd.
Love that. So am I. What is one of the best unexpected things that's happened to you since giving up booze?
Oh, everything. I think that I did not even have everything has been unexpected and beautiful, because I didn't even have the creative capacity to know what was possible for me. My largest dreams were small in comparison of what was available to me. And now that I've achieved so much, I'm just like, what is next? I never even thought to dream this big. And so your largest dreams are small in comparison to what's actually available to you.
So can I just ask, I know we're doing lightning round, but just quickly on that, was it that, so were you manifesting things that you wanted, or were opportunities coming in that were even bigger than what you wanted or thought?
Both. I mean, I wanted to write a book since I was in second grade, and it suddenly that came to life and it became a reality when I stopped drinking. And I wanted a specific agent. I wanted Gabby Bernstein's agent, because she's a hero of mine. And I wanted, you know, a specific publisher, and all of those things just happened. They happened. And yeah, I still had to put in the footwork, but they happened. And they were like wildest dreams, like things that it was a long stretch for me to say, that's the agent that I want. Like, who am I to say that? And yet the universe delivered. And I just think, there are just things that I just were unfathomable, like long stretches that came to fruition.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. Before the last question, where can people find out more about your work and anything significant you want to mention? Obviously it's going to be the book, and I'm selling this to high heaven, sharing it, selling it, getting everyone to read this book. But just tell us, where can we find
you? I am mostly on Instagram. I'm at Amanda Kuda, and you can get to my website and all my links there. You can find the book, buy the book, everywhere, from my Instagram or at amandakuda.com.
Amazing. And I know that you've also got a free masterclass. You've got a free 5-day course. I don't know if it will be free when the book comes out, but any of those links we can also share.
Yes.
I've started that program and it's really great. So
good.
And you've got so many resources with the book. So we will send people there. Okay. Final question. What is your number one piece of advice for any single woman who's listening to this and they're killing it in their career, but they're struggling in their love life? I feel I know what you might say here.
Well, I would say stop drinking, because here's the thing. I have this quote in the book by my friend William Porter. He's in the UK, and it's something to the effect of, whoever you are as a drinker is not the real you. It is a dulled down, pitiful version of you. And as kind of a punch in the gut as that sounds, it's so true. So imagine what you could do in your career, but most importantly in your romantic life, if you were showing up as a healed, fully present, most authentic version of you. Like right now, you probably, I can cuss here, right? I already have. Okay, just making sure. I don't know if this translates in UK culture, but you've probably been attracting fuckboys and Peter Pan types and people who aren't very serious, because let's be honest, if you're drinking all the time, you're not very serious. Mm. And if you want to attract someone who is going to show up, you have to show up first for yourself. And I know that probably sounds like self-help bullshit, but as someone who has felt the living proof of that come to fruition, like, stop escaping, stop dulling yourself down, stop telling yourself that you can't do something without alcohol, and just try, just prove it to yourself and see what happens. And let me know, also report back.
Oh God, love that. Love you. I'm so glad that you've come into my life. I am so excited for this episode to go out. I'm so excited for people to get their hands on your book. You have been amazing. Everyone, get the book. It will change your life. It's changed mine, and I will keep you all posted. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Amanda.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really hope this episode served you and gave some practical insights and strategies around the next steps in transforming your love life from the inside out. Do come and let me know over on Instagram what resonated for you the most and why. I am at Persia Lawson. And if you want more tips and tools on how to become a vibrational match for the powerful, committed relationship that you deserve, check out my book, Love Is Coming, as well as my programs and coaching containers over at persialawson.com. This website is also linked in this episode's show notes. And if you got value from this episode, I'd be so grateful if you'd like, subscribe, share, and or leave a quick review. This helps the podcast rank higher so it can reach other women who want or need the support. And to have your question answered, send it over to podcast@persialawson.com and we'll get to it ASAP. Until next time, I want you to remember that love is coming for you. But in the meantime, it's your responsibility to stop looking outside of yourself for the partner you want to get and start looking inside of yourself for the partner you want to be.